G'day team, welcome to another installment of the U Project. My name is Craig Harper, but you can call me Jumbo, or you can call me Harps. You can call me Mr. Harper, you can call me Dickhead. You can call me whatever you want. There have been a myriad of names over the years, and I pretty much respond to anything, because it's how I roll. Tiffany Ann Cook and I had a chat with Mark Labusque from the Simply Practically Human podcast recently. We went deep on a lot of stuff. It was great. I hope you enjoy it. See you at the end.
Hello there, people. It's Mark Labusque here. And very, very luckily, even though we busted up not too long back, I've got the amazing Craig Harper back on the Simply Practically Human podcast. But not only that, I've also got a bonus on this one. I've got, I don't want to call her this, but this is what Harp said. We've got the button pusher and the recorder of this podcast, the great Tiff Cook joining us as well. So g'day, humans.
Oh, g'day, mate. Hi, Tiff.
Hi. I was a bit frightened about what he was going to say you called me, Harps.
Well, we wouldn't say that because I do not know what you're talking about. So it looks like we're doing an electronic three-way here. And you are over there at TYP Central. Mark's in Simply Practically Human Central. And, yeah, it's good to have a chat, mate, and it's good to get the band back together. How have you been?
Mate, pretty good. You know, I had the ups and down piece. Last week I had a bit of a pity party again. The Wednesday when the chairman came out and said we were going to be locked down for a bit longer, I had to reschedule and postpone and cancel. And then I went and sat on my bed and ate a block of caramel chocolate and a couple of ice creams, mate, which you'd be delighted with, I'm sure.
Is that your go-to, chocolate and ice cream?
Yeah, I got a sweet tooth. I actually went to the local organic warehouse shop here in Essendon the other day and asked them if you got something sweet I can eat that's not bad for me. And they gave me a vegan chocolate. And I think what they wanted to say to me is you shouldn't eat it all at once, though, mate. But I think that's my problem.
Was it any good or not?
It actually was, mate. It was nice because it had some hazelnuts in it as well. But yeah, look. I'm going all right, mate. And thank you last night because you gave me a call a bit late and you said, hey, yeah, you're going. So I do appreciate you checking in. How are you going, by the way?
Mate, I'm good. You know, it's I think you adapt and like I'm I don't know how I'm gonna go great when we come out of lockdown, but it's so long now and it's so familiar now that it's my new normal. But what about you, Tiffany Ann Cook? Are you good?
I am good. I adjust pretty well once we find our rhythm in the old lockdown.
Mm.
I'm a bit like you, I think. I'm a bit more almost wondering what's going to happen when they open the door again.
Well, I'm slightly worried and I'm not, you know, so before anyone goes what side of the fence you're on, I'm on no side. And I really hate talking about, and I won't talk about the politics or the science or that, but interestingly, literally 10 minutes before we rolled, I was just watching, I've had a massive day and I literally laid on my bed and I went, I need 8 minutes of doing nothing, turned on the telly and they were talking about the vaccination rate in Israel, how it's, you know, they were one of the most vaccinated early days, like by June, they were over 80% vaccination, both doses. And right now they're going through an explosion of COVID cases and it's like I think it was 16,000 cases yesterday, I'm not sure, but it's like, oh, I just wonder because there are so many variants over time that I don't know how it's going to go. But what I do know is I can't control it or change it. So I'm going to just batten down the hatches and keep doing what I'm doing and control my controllables and we'll see where we are in a year. Somebody told me today that, and this could be wrong, the Western Australian Premier, what's his name? Does anyone know? I should know.
Mark McGowan.
Thank you. Thank you. Nobody in or out of it, nobody in or out of the state till April next year or later.
Yep.
I'm like, that's a half year. No, really? I'm like, wow. So anyway, we'll see what goes on. But, mate, it's good to be back on your show. And it's good to be chatting with you. And it's good to reconnect in a somewhat semi-official capacity.
I'm loving it, and great to have Tiff here as well. Listen, I wanted to check in. One other thing that's been working well that we talked about last time is, and it was funny, I got a phone call today, mate, from the CEO of that infrared sauna place that I got that sauna from.
Oh, really?
And here's what he said to me. Thanks for the plug on the U Project podcast.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And
that's...
I went, I reckon you need to speak to Harps.
Yeah, so, definitely.
He wants your details, mate. So his name's Alex. He's the CEO there. Lovely young fellow. And I'm going to put you in touch with him because, mate, the infrared sauna, and I've been listening to YouTube just recently, in the, it's so good in the morning and relaxes me for the day. So shout out to Alex, and, mate, he'll be hitting you up shortly.
Well, Alex, I look forward to that call because I'm thinking about the old infrared sauna myself for, among other things, my dodgy sore AM back, my L4, L5 ever-present pain. I think a little bit of warmth might be good first thing in the day. We'll see how we go.
Beautiful. So here's where I want to go here today, because some comments that came back after we sort of started to date each other for 6 weeks there in a row, that how authentic we were. And I have a bit of an issue with the word authentic. I think we sort of throw it around a lot, and perhaps we don't understand it as much as we should. But when people talk about their authentic selves, Harp, what goes on for you when people say, I'm being authentic, or you're not being authentic, or be your authentic self?
What is authenticity? Yeah, good question. Now, before I answer that, I'm just going to point out to those people who are going, who's Mark and what's this about them dating? Most of you know who Mark is because he's been, well, we've done a bunch together, but we did 6 Saturdays in a row, kind of co-sharing on Mark's show and mine. So that's what he's talking about. We didn't literally date, but you never know. If COVID drags on, when we finally come out, I mean, you know. So when we talk about, like, the really interesting thing with a lot of these kind of, you know, some of them are ubiquitous, seemingly everywhere words, you know, and kind of a little bit, I think a bit overused, but the idea of being your authentic self, I get it. For me, what that means anyway is it means that my choices, my behaviors, my conversations, my lifestyle, my relationships, my habits, the way that I do life, the way that I manage my health and my body and my food and all of those operational things are a reflection of what I say matter to me. In other words, my values. So this is, I used to say to people, I probably would still say it, I guess, but if you were living authentically, or perhaps another phrase for that would be in alignment, I could observe you as somebody that I work with or know or see about, and I would probably be able to figure out, if not all, some of your values without even having a conversation with you based on what I see. Because if you are living an aligned life, then your behavior is a reflection of that internal stuff that you say really matters, what I call your sat-nav, your internal sat-nav. And so, you know, authenticity is really an outward expression of your inward values. And, you know, I think one of the downsides of living out of alignment is that, you know, we tend to be frustrated and unfulfilled and unrewarded and unhappy. Whereas when I am living, for me anyway, when I am, which I'm not always doing it, by the way, I'm a work in progress, but when I am doing my best, when I am reaching out to you, going, mate, how are you going? When I am, you know, being genuinely concerned with Tiff or whoever it is that I care about on planet me, and I'm helping friends and strangers, and I'm walking my talk, and I'm trying to be of service, and I'm trying to get over my own bullshit so that I can help and empower others. For me, that's when I'm most aligned. And it's also when I feel the most, I guess, content and, what's the word? Yeah, I feel like I'm in the right place. I feel like I'm mentally and emotionally and spiritually in the right place. So authenticity, I guess, is just about, are your behaviors and is the stuff that you typically do aligned to what you say are your values and your life philosophy?
Thanks, mate. Tiff, your thoughts around those two big, the authentic self, the big words there?
Very much in line with Harps. I think it's just about being real. I think it's just a fancy word for just being real and not putting a mask on for anyone.
Love it. I love it. Let me throw another layer over the top of this now then. So I sort of look at it this way. There's like there's a circle with authentic self written in it. And then outside the circle, there are these things that we do, that we play called roles, sort of roles in our lives. Like, you know, Mark the podcaster, Mark the facilitator, Mark the parent, the partner, whatever it might be. You know, we could say that about all of us.
Mm.
My question, or I guess my comment for comment from either of you is, how different is the role that you're playing to your authentic self? And can it be different? Should it be different? And if it's too different, what happens? There's a lot of questions.
Well, I think one is like a role that we play, like I'm managing this team. That doesn't mean I'm being disingenuous. I'm the manager of the team. That's the role. Or I'm the coffee maker in this organization. That's my role. Or I'm the whatever. I mean, they don't need to be, you know, they can be quite different things. I can be my authentic self while still filling a role and playing a part and being a team member. I think what is interesting, extrapolating on that idea though, Mark, is this notion of the different kind of layers of us. And I call it, so I feel like we have four layers, and one is the public, one is the personal, one is the private, and one is the secret. And it's like public you is the you that everyone gets to know, right? Everyone, the guy that makes your coffee, the lady that lives across the road, whatever, like everyone gets, that's you just with, that's you opening the door and sharing as much of you as you are comfortable to do in that forum, in that capacity. Then the next level is personal you, which is, you know, probably this person is the one you open the door a little bit wider. Again, you reveal more of yourself. You become more vulnerable, more open, perhaps more exposed on an emotional and psychological and behavioral sense to the world. And that the personal you would be friends and family. And then private you would be the person that perhaps your partner sees.
Yep.
Maybe one or two of your close, close family or friends, maybe private you. And then secret you is the one that no one knows except you. And we've all got a secret us, and we like to think we don't, but we do.
Of course.
Because there's stuff that we even don't want our mum and dad to know or our partner to know. And I'm not talking about anything heinous. And so I think the challenge is, so when we look at those again, we go public you, personal you, private you, secret you. I try to, as much as possible, without boring people or being inappropriate, at the very least bring the second one, which is personal me, to the podcast.
Yeah.
And when it's appropriate, private me, where I'm sharing deep thoughts and feelings and experiences that could make me look bad or could turn people off. But I believe that sharing that story or that experience might help others, even though it might not help me. Like, I think vulnerability is a gamble, but I think it's also a blessing for both sides done the right way.
And we've got to take risks, because I know you've said at times, if you're not sort of getting punched in the face, well, you're not doing the work. Tiff, I just wanted to extend on the authenticity and the role piece and just get your thoughts on this. I'm sure people will relate to it. You know, when people will say, oh, geez, Tiff hasn't turned up or which Tiff is turning up today or which Mark's turned up today, like, because all of us, one day you walked in smiling, next day you walked in, you had the shits on or whatever it might be. How does it make you feel when you see people perhaps turning up differently from day to day? What sort of reaction does that have for you?
I feel like I've walked that path.
Yep.
That like for the last almost 10 years, I opened the door on that and I've taken step after step after step, and I try to understand it, right? Because I didn't, when I was TIFF wearing a mask, and I did for a very long time, and even, you know, I didn't understand what was behind that. So yep. When I see someone behaving differently, and I think, you know, as Craig was describing those layers of us, I don't know how I feel about the secret us. I feel like I want to get to know the secret me, and I've done a deep dive on it lately, and I wheel it out a fair bit. I wheel it out because I feel like when we've got a secret us, we've got to be okay with that part of us.
Yep. Yeah.
It's kind of a work in progress for me, definitely still.
And I think it is, because the other thing that, you know, I hear this quite a bit, like people that went to teachers college with me back in Ballarat in the late 80s, and they say, you've changed. And I'm like, fucking oath I have. Like some of the things I did back then, I wouldn't be doing today. I look at it in the workplace today, and I say this happens on a day-to-day basis, is particularly for managers, they can lose their authenticity, they can lose their values and whatnot, and then they just turn up differently every day or even every meeting. And I'm just wondering, Harp, some advice for those people who just aren't aware as much as they should be about, like, fuck, who am I going to turn up as today? What sort of advice would you give them in that moment to be more aware?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really almost a contradictory question, but I understand the question. But it's to those people who aren't aware, what advice would you give them? Well, they don't think they need advice because they're unaware, right? But I, you know, this is self-awareness is, more than most people, I know the complexity and the width and breadth of self-awareness because I'm spending 4 years researching it, literally. But what is interesting, I was looking at something today and I'm starting to write up, and I'll answer your question, mate. I'm starting to write up what is called my mid-candidature report, progress report. And slide one, because it's got to be done on Zoom, is literally just who's the candidate? That's me. I'm the student. Who are his supervisors? You know, what date did you start? November 1, 2019. That's when my candidature started. Slide two is the name of my project, my 4-year research, which is the U project. And then underneath, I've got a quote from Socrates, and it just says, "The beginning of wisdom is to know thyself."
Yep.
Now that was 2,500 years ago. Now, so this philosopher, this dude who, by the way, got killed, he got condemned to death for not aligning with common thinking or theology in the day because he thought for himself and he spoke out. He got killed at 71. But what's interesting is that 2,400 years ago, 400, 500 years BC, this guy was talking about what we are talking about, which is knowing you. And even TIFF talking about, I've been doing a deep dive on me. And I think it really matters. The person we need to understand is ourself. And it's when you aren't self-aware, which we all aren't at times, including me, somebody can't make you that. It has to come from a curiosity and a want, a drive, a desire to go, I want to understand why I am the way I am, so that I'm more aware around others of my reactions of why when TIFF says this or does that, do I get incensed? Because it's really what she's saying kind of makes sense, but it really fucks me off. But it's not so much about TIFF as recognizing that thing in me that's triggered. So I just think it, like, this awareness of self needs to start with a curiosity, mate, and a willingness to go, look, I don't really understand why I do the things that I do. And if I'm being brutally real with myself, I am doing a lot of shit that doesn't work. as evidenced by the outcomes in my life. And this has been my story. And this has been my journey is, you know, and again, we don't want to make our life one big complicated experiment, but at the same time, we also don't want to live a life that is somewhere between dog shit and mediocre, because we don't think critically about our existence. We just get up every day and hit repeat. Even though yesterday was kind of crap, we do it again today and tomorrow, and then we wake up and it's 2024. So, you know, I think that that awareness piece, as you say, that piece, it starts with our willingness to go, look, I need to open a new door in terms of the cognition of the way that I see the world and myself in the world.
Mate, interesting you shared about Socrates. I had an ex-colleague of mine from Aussie Post, Peter Godfrey, on my podcast a couple of weeks back, and he spent the last year just literally with his head in the books and usually just all philosophy, you know, recent and historical. And what he came up with was exactly what you just said, is that the wise words of those of thousands of years ago are still creating the big questions of today that we seem to never answer, or I'm going to say this as well, we never want to answer.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to just add something in here. We're sort of going around the world, is I think by not answering these questions, we practice what Marty Linsky from Harvard Kennedy School calls the skillful art of work avoidance, because it's just too hard. So maybe we can go there and maybe start with you, Tiff, on this one. Does that skillful art of work avoidance, does that ring true for you? I'm going to put you right on the spot here because I know you're up for it. And what sort of things do you think you've skillfully avoided the work of over time?
100% it applies to me. I jumped into that whole busyness trap of just getting busy and doing and achieving to a point where, you know, I jumped in the boxing ring and I started boxing and I was working and I moved to Melbourne. I did all the things. And then once I kind of hit 30, that physical training, that physical achievement, like I just couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up with my own work rate and my body got tired. But when I rested, the demons we talk about, they were waiting. When I rested, I felt overwhelmingly empty and sad, and I didn't know why. But all I knew was I didn't have the energy that I had when I was 20. So this busyness, this whole distraction piece, it couldn't continue, and I had to do the work. And I was like, all right, well, what's the work?
Yeah.
What did you discover? Sorry, Mark.
Like, okay,
when you got still and you got out of the busyness and you just sat in the fear, or you sat in the anxiety, or you sat in the emotional anguish, what was there?
Uncomfortable feelings. And like I said, I felt sad, I felt unworthy, and I felt empty. But I didn't know those feelings because I'd always jumped into just being busy. I would train, or I would go to work, or I would go and drink with my mates. I was always doing something. I remember having housemates that used to laugh at me. They'd be like, you either fly in the door after work, get changed, fly out and go to a fitness class, or you come in and literally come in and collapse face down on your bed and fall asleep.
I get that, but I want to know, other than you sat in the emotion, you felt like, what was there? Like, what was the cause?
Childhood trauma. We first ever spoke about this when you asked the question last year on a podcast, and I've spoken about it heaps. So I realized that I'd experienced sexual trauma for years as a child and put it in a little emotional black box, tucked it away and put it in a cupboard and never thought of it again. And I remember once in my very early 20s, there was a time when it weirdly popped up, and I remember crying about it and not even knowing what brought it up, but I knew I was crying about that, and it was weird. And then I put it in a box again.
Yeah. How are you now? So we're a year down the track-ish. This is probably not the right question, but it's the best one I can think of, or not the right words. Have you progressed? Have you dealt with staff, or what does that mean? What's the update?
Yeah, incredibly. You know, when you first, we had that conversation on a podcast where you asked the question and I'd never publicly spoken of it before. And we didn't talk about it in depth. I just admitted it and then we chatted and moved on. And the next 2 days, I remember just thinking, wow, I thought that that wasn't a big deal to say, because I thought with some of my communications, I was referring to it and I was moving through it, and I've done years of therapy, but it was holding a weight over me and speaking about it. And now I've done like fairly open and honest conversations on mine and other podcasts about it, and it just, I'm a different person, you know, with and I'm still doing the work.
Do you know what is really interesting? And Mark, I'll shut the fuck up in a minute because it's your show. But for all of us, this is the danger, I think, because Mark's a good communicator. You're a good communicator. I go, all right, right? So one of the dangers of being a good communicator is that you can just kind of verbally bullshit your way through anything.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of, I know I can do a presentation, and I've done them, I hate to admit, but I'm being honest, where I get by purely on verbal skill, experience, talent, you know, miles on the clock, I'm actually not really present. I'm not really present, right? And the thing is, you can be on a podcast, and this is what's challenging, 560 shows in, Mark's 100 or so in, you're 150 or whatever, you know, it's like hundreds, is to show up and to be present and to be real and not just go, oh, fuck, we've got to talk for 45 minutes or so. Oh, gee, where are we at? We've got 20 to go. What will we talk about next? No, fuck all that. Is to actually go, oh, all right, well, here we are now. I didn't think we'd get here. I didn't, neither. Like, we had a quick chat before we went live. None of us spoke about this, but here we are, right? But it's being okay with being in this moment. And it's being okay with, oh, well, perhaps this is not super slick or polished or articulate or inspiring, but fuck, it's real, right? And that's when you're stepping out of public you and personal you, and now you're into private you. And now, ironically, private you creates greater connection with the public than public you. This is the irony. The deeper you go, the wider the door. That's, of course, if you are comfortable, you the listener or whoever, I'm not suggesting anyone do anything, but the irony is the wider we open the door, the more we think we're going to get slammed, but generally the more we get embraced, not always, but in my experience generally. So I'm really glad to hear that from you. And I know I bullshit a lot, but I'm super fucking proud of you because that is so hard, and you are super brave.
It, you know what it does? It opens up the door on the public you. So there's experiences that happen, and I'm talking real time now, and I don't even talk to you about this, but there are things that change in my life now that I've spoken about that, now that I've pulled that from the depths of my awareness and brought it out on the table and talked about it. So I realized recently that, relationships have always been hard for me. And when you invited me to officially become part of the You Project, which I wanted, and I'd verbalised to people that would be a dream come true if you offered me that. And then for 2 or 3 days after that initial conversation, I was terrified. I was terrified that this was going to be, I made the realisation that once there was a transaction where I had to be something and give something to be something, to have this relationship that we had before, this idea of being a commodity really pushed some of those buttons that hold meaning from when I was a child, and there was a situation that connects with.
Wow.
And this is the stuff that comes up now, and I go, okay. So I have to sit with it and go, is how I'm experiencing Craig anything to do with Craig? Nah, it's everything to do with me. And what's the story around that? And how do I change that moving forward?
Love it.
Fantastic. Tiff, amazing story. I've not heard that story before. Thank you for sharing. And it's, you know, when I'm sort of sitting here, I'm like, what am I thinking? I'm not. I'm actually, for me, it's feeling, it's like I'm feeling privileged to hear someone share something, someone I don't know that very well, sharing this. And the other thing that you said, Harps, which I love is, mate, apart from the first time I got you on the podcast when I was, my heart rate was at about 158 beats a minute because you were fucking Craig Harper and I was Mark LeBusk, 30 listens a day and all that shit we've talked about. The way that this has worked well for us is that we haven't really had a script. We've just jumped on. And I'm going to say this. I think the world's really calling out and screaming out for this sort of thing is like, just be human, be who you are, share some stuff. I like it when you two talk about, you know, one thing that rings with me a lot from when you two talk is about, you know, you're going to open up a big door now. I want to say this, you don't actually have to open the door the full way to start with. You just slowly open the door up where you, I call comfortably uncomfortable until it keeps coming open. I think one of the challenges here is some people, they go to the self-help gurus who tell them just to fucking smash the door down straight away. And they end up in the fetal position in the corner of the room, sucking their thumbs because they've screwed them. I don't even know where I'm going with that, by the way. That was like, well, that was a Craig Harper rant.
Yeah, no, I like the rant. But what I think the mistake that some, let's loosely call them gurus, do, and I've made many mistakes, so I'm not elevating me and putting anyone else down, but is we think that what works for us works for others, which is ridiculous because we're not them. They're not us. You know, so this is my ever-present message is, you know, trial and error, be your own experiment. Be your own scientist, try stuff, see what the outcome is, listen. If something resonates, take it for a test drive. But you're exactly right, Mark. I mean, you know, you don't necessarily need to swing the door open at all. Maybe you just basically look through the keyhole or the, you know, whatever that thing, you know, to check, see who's on the other side, or maybe you keep the chain on the door and just have it slightly ajar. But you know, the other thing, just back to what you said about being able to just jump on and freestyle, I'm doing a podcast on Saturday night with two guys from Britain who I've done one before with. They're great. They're called the, what's their podcast?
I think Home, it's called Home Vitality.
Home Vitality podcast or something. Anyway.
Is that the two blokes that bash the shit out of each other with the...
Yeah, the MMA dudes. They're both geese. They're fucking geezers, aren't they? You fucking geezer, right? And they're great, right? But it's funny, they kept wanting to send me questions and to kind of prep. And I'm like, boys, all right, listen up. Literally my job is conversations. I've been having conversations for 40 years and now you want me to rehearse for a conversation. It's like saying to a bloke who's been a builder for 40 years, okay, we're going to get you some nails and a bit of wood. We just want you to practice putting a nail in that bit of wood so we know that you can build our house. And I said, you know, and they sent me an email this week going, we know that you don't want any questions because we know that you won't fucking read them. And I'm right, that is correct. Do not send me your questions. If you ask me something I can't answer, I'll say, I don't know. Other than that, we'll be good. And I honestly think that, I mean, it depends what you're doing, but for me, podcasts with less planning are better. Like I don't, if I'm like I spoke to a lady the other day who's got her own artificial intelligence and robotics business. In fact, she's up today being Thursday. She's a genius. I know more about Socrates than I know about robotics and AI, right? I know fucking nothing except I have a vague idea of what AI is and does. So that was my starting point. And I go, at the start, I go, I'm a moron. I don't know anything. But, you know, for me, this is a lesson. So tell me all about it. And I think it was a really good conversation. I don't need to be an expert in whatever they're an expert in to be able to converse with someone.
Mate, there's so many parallels. I just spoke to an AI expert a few weeks ago of mine, Twain Liu, her name is, from London, and she is a genius. She works with governments around AI and stuff. And I was, again, going into it thinking I needed to be half clever, but I didn't, because she was trying to show how AI and human intelligence should work together and not work apart. But I had this idea that fuck, how can I even get in the podcast with her? Because she's too clever. I just want to touch on something here. Not scripted.
Mm.
All of that sort of stuff. Let's go. I love it when people ask me, I call it questions without notice. I reckon they're the best questions to get, as long as they're not doing it from a place of ill intent.
Mm.
But I hear this so often, and maybe, Tiff, you can comment on this one. Those people who say, I just wish I was quicker on my feet at the time. I wish I had said what I wanted to say and I didn't think about it at the time. Do you reckon that is because people are too scripted, or are they just shit frightened to be more open to sharing an answer that other people might think stupid?
I think... From where I stand, my superpower was curiosity. I am just so genuinely curious that I'll ask the right questions. I'll listen back over my podcast and sometimes think, oh, I'd love to know this. I hear it differently when I'm not in the conversation, but when I'm in the conversation, I am genuinely interested. I think that where people can struggle is they're worried or they're in a different environment. So I'm thinking about, I'm on the camera, I'm thinking about what do people think of me? Do people think I'm not smart? What should I say to this? I've got to sound good. I like harps. I operate better if I don't know the question that's coming, because then I'm forced to listen and be authentic. You can't not be authentic. If I've got questions sent in earlier, well, your mind's going to start trying to prepare, and then, you know, and then you're going to try and remember, and then you're not present because you're in your head.
I had a client this just yesterday send me, oh, you know, you're keynoting next week. Could you send us through what you're doing? And I said, no, I can't. And they're like, what do you mean? But we're paying. And I said, because it's going to be a spoiler if I do that. We know what the topic is. It's about that leadership is a verb. All right. It's not your title and your fancy name and whatnot, but I'll send us what you're going to do. No, because then you don't get the experience. And again, why is it, Harps, ask you this, why is it that we need to know the answer so bloody quickly?
Yeah, that's interesting, that when companies want to know, they basically almost want the presentation before the presentation. Why do we want to know? Look, I think we companies and organizations and, you know, individuals, we like to minimize risk. We don't like uncertainty. They want to know what's going to come. Like whoever's paying you to show up, they want to know what you're going to say, and they want to be ready for that. And they want to make sure you do the right thing, not the wrong thing. And they want to make sure that you're aligned with their theme for the day. And I get it. I get it. I get asked stuff like that too. And you know, I've had many occasions where I turn up to do somewhere between a keynote and a full day at a conference. So that is, I'm speaking somewhere between 1 hour and 8 hour, and they say, can we have your USB for your presentation? And I go, I don't have one. And they go, oh God, can you get someone to courier it? I go, no, I literally don't have one. They go, what do you mean? And I go, I don't use a PowerPoint presentation. They go, for the whole day? I go, yeah. They go, what do? I go, talk. And they're fucking perplexed that somebody can just talk.
Yeah,
without 27,000 fucking graphs and slides.
And then they come back with their bullshit reason. Or maybe there's a bit of validity to this, is that, yeah, but some people learn better when they see slides. And it's like, I haven't met any of those humans yet that learn better. Humans who sit there and are curious and deeply listen learn better than someone looking through a... I got to speak one time after he was the shadow treasurer at the time. And it was like, you fucking beauty, because he just rolled out slide after slide after slide, and everyone was doing the Ferris Bueller dribbling out of their mouths. And when I got up and just spoke, I thought I was Craig Harper.
I don't know that that's the high watermark, but I had a similar experience. And I say this with all due respect, but I spoke at the Royal Australian College of Surgeons. And the lady who spoke before me, God bless, like complete scientist. So the content was fucking mind-blowing, but we'll just say politely, it was somewhat bland.
Yep.
And you know, if she was up there for 40 minutes, there were 45 slides, 62 graphs, 47 charts, 16 million data points. And then she got off and I went, fucking great, great. Because, well, you know, within reason, I mean, it was, I guess it depends on the individual, but let's just go with an experience sitting in the room wasn't particularly captivating. But, you know, again, you turn up and you just do what you can do. But I also do think in defense of slides and graphs and videos, that I think, by the way that you present, the way that I present, definitely not the best way necessarily, just best way for you, best way for me. I've also, like I presented after Stephen Bradbury, the accidental gold medalist, I think he calls himself or something, but I've presented with him a few times. And he basically has a 1 hour choreographed, maybe 50 minutes choreographed, scripted videos, fucking audio, sound, music. It's a show. It's a performance, but it's fucking great.
Yes.
It's great. He's great at it, right? He's not me. I'm not him. It's not better or worse. It's different. We do different things. I'm not fucking running up the front with smoke machines going and doing a backflip and high-fiving all the motherfuckers in the front row and then just playing air guitar to AC/DC. I'm a teacher and I want people to like it and I'm a storyteller and I want people to be present and I want them to enjoy the day. But I think we need, you know, we need a cross-section of communication styles to reach a cross-section of personalities, you know?
So let's finish it up there, because what I'm thinking here is, and I, as you were talking, I'm thinking about how good it was the time I got to speak when the person before me put people to sleep, and then you brought up Stephen Bradbury, like, great show. I think of the workplace when particularly junior managers, younger managers, I'm thinking the workplace now, walk into a room and the famous people are there, like the CEO and all of this sort of stuff, and they're shitting themselves. Tiff, have you got one? I've got one, but I'll let you go first, or Harps. Who was someone you had to speak after that when you saw that they were speaking before you, you had a moment of, oh, fuck, I'm in trouble here. Have you ever come across that? Because I have. I've had to speak after someone. And it's, have you got one, Tiff?
I've only had it in situations where I have been comfortable and where I've known that speaker. So I've kind of been lifted by that energy.
Yep.
But, yeah, definitely stay tuned. Come back to me one day.
I copped, and look, I really enjoy listening to this guy, but he was at PwC at the time. I was speaking there at a conference and he was working for him, but I had Russell Howcroft on before me. And I just shit myself. I'm like, I'm going to be an absolute dud here. And it's funny how you compare yourself to, you know, he's been on TV and he's famous. And then, you know, here I am, the Bogan from Mildura, getting up to say something, but it absolutely froze me.
Is that because you started almost trying to change the way you were going to do things?
I think there was a lot of things going through my head. It was like, I need to be clever. Here's all the things I haven't got that he's already got, so I better find a way to do it. I need to think differently. I need to turn up differently. I don't think I'm dressed right now. But he, when I got up and I started to talk, he was still there, and I said, I'm in a bit of fucking trouble here. And he just said, oh, mate, you'll be fine. After that, I was okay. But I was comparing myself to somebody who I thought was much better than me, and I did that with Harps. And I guess to finish off, this one here is for people to think about when you get in that moment where you're comparing yourself to someone and you're having that moment of, Jesus, you're just so much better than me. What should you do? What do you do in that moment? What are you thinking, Harps? Just to wrap us up on this.
I think you learn. You go, fuck, you're great. That's amazing. I'm a 4. You're a 13 out of 10. That's what I feel. I would much rather speak with people who are better than me. I'd much rather play tennis with people that are better than me. I'd much rather roll on the BJJ mat with people that are a black belt, not a white belt. I'd, you know, it, like, hang out with people who drag you up. And if somebody is better than you on a given day or on their that stage of their journey. You know, comparison can be the thief of joy. People use that expression, but it can also be, you know, there's a difference between comparing where someone is at. Like if we compared Tiff, right, we go, well, we could go, look, Craig does this, this, and this. Tiff does that. Here's a better comparison. How's Tiff going compared to Craig at her age?
Yep.
That's a better comparison.
Yep.
Because Craig's fucking 200 years old. He should be good, right? Right. So, but even then, rather than comparing, I'm like, what can I learn from Craig or what can I learn from Mark or Tiff? And if there is any legitimate comparison, it should really be comparing self with self. Comparing, you know, 2021 Craig with 2019 Craig, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, what was I like 1, 2, 5 years ago at this skill? And am I better? Am I the same? Am I worse? Am I progressing? Am I learning? You know, but it is an interesting thing, but it's also something that we do, you know, like I think most people, even people who won't admit it, they compare themselves, including me. I compare myself, but I realize what a dickhead I'm being. But
of course,
mate, it's been fun. It's been fun chatting. Appreciate you and good to see you again.
Hey, good to see you. And look, I've never had a button pusher on an episode before who has provided so much bloody value. So, Tiff, thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure, lads.
Thanks, team. Love your collective gutses.